Out here on the San Mateo coast, the fog rolls in and covers everything. It can make the world feel a little mysterious, a little hidden. And in a way, that's how a lot of us feel about our food system. We know it's out there, but the real stories, the people behind the produce, can get lost in the mist. I'm your host, Ranger Kelak. I'm an ag educator, a business coach, and a future farmer myself. And I'm obsessed with pulling back that curtain. This is The Foggy Farmer, the podcast where we get to know the growers, ranchers, and innovators who are shaping the future of agriculture right here on the coast and beyond. We're here to dig into their stories, learn from their hard-won wisdom, and highlight the incredible work being done to build a more resilient and connected food system. So grab a cup of coffee and let's get to know the people who feed us. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Foggy Farmer Podcast. Imagine, you're walking through the grocery store, passing the dairy aisle, and you stop at that familiar wall of white. Whole milk, 2%, oat milk, almond milk, the choices just seem endless. But here's the question that probably crosses your mind. Where does this milk actually come from? Sure, we all remember the Got Milk campaign with those celebrity mustaches, but they never really told us much about the farms, the cows, or the people behind our morning cereal. Most of us have no idea what modern dairy farming actually looks like. Now, we see headlines about factory farming or antibiotics, we wonder about animal welfare, and frankly, we're not really sure what to believe. The disconnect between our food and where it comes from has never been wider. And that's where today's guest comes in. Dr. Michelle Schack didn't grow up on a farm either, but she's become one of dairy farming's most trusted voices. From raising guide dogs for the blind in East Bay, to now educating over 400,000 TikTok followers as the Dairy Doc, she's made it her mission to answer the questions we're all thinking about but just don't know who to ask. As a UC Davis-trained veterinarian and co-founder of Dairykind, Michelle has spent the last decade on dairy farms, seeing what really happens behind the scenes, and yes, she once won a national contest by turning a Katy Perry song into Cow-lifornia Girls. Well, we'll talk more about that later. This is a conversation about trust, transparency, and what happens when someone who understands both sides decides to bridge the gap. Michelle, welcome to The Foggy Farmer.
Thank you so much. That was a really good intro. I was imagining right there with you.
Thank you. You're like, I also wonder where our milk comes from.
I've been there, so yes, you said it so perfectly there.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's really the big thing, right, is a lot of people just don't know or understand or really have been able to take the time. I mean, we're all busy. We all have a million things going on, but it's important for conversations like this to happen where we're able to talk to someone that is able to, like I said, bridge that gap. So if you could just take a moment to let our guests know who you are, you know, despite the intro that I just gave. Your background, what got you into this industry, and what you hope to get out of this conversation today.
Sure. I grew up in Alameda County, so very close to where you are. And I went to college and veterinary school at UC Davis, which is up near Sacramento. Love California. Northern California is just a beautiful place, and it holds a special place in my heart. After vet school, I moved to Arizona, and I've been there for the last 10 years working as a dairy cattle veterinarian. But I grew up in the East Bay not knowing where my food came from. So that being able to see both sides of the issue, being able to understand the headlines, but then also understand what happens on the farm, like you were talking about, that's been a real passion of mine to share that out with the world so I can help people understand. Because like you said, many people just haven't had the opportunity to learn where their food comes from. It's not that they don't want to know or that they don't care. They don't have that accessible to them. And I want to be that voice. So I now work as a dairy cattle veterinarian. I also have co-founded an education company for employees on dairy farms to help them do the best job that they can do and improve animal well-being on farms. And then I also am online where I share just little bits about my day, fun facts, things that happen on dairy farms. I answer people's questions and I'm on all the platforms, and it's been a lot of fun to see that grow and be able to engage with the public as well.
Yeah. And then when it comes to like your experience at UC Davis. I'm also a Davis alumni, so I thought that was awesome that we were able to connect in that way. I like to tell people that I originally went to be a veterinarian, got into animal science, realized very quickly it's a lot more science than animal, which you're being a doctor makes total sense. But I ended up switching over to the economics and business side of everything. So while still being connected, I thought that was really interesting too, was after I switched from the science side to the more the management and business side, like you look at things through a different lens. Like you don't look at things necessarily through the animal or the like the biology side per se. It's more so about the welfare and economics of it. So I'm just curious, like what shifted for you while you were at UC Davis, like the different lenses that you looked at the industry through?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because the economists are looking at it in one way. Mm-hmm. The managers are looking at it in one way. The owners are looking at it in one way. The veterinarians are looking at it one way. Nutritionists are looking at it in one way, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's a whole team of people helping get our food from the farm to the plate. That goes on to the suppliers and the retailers and the processors, all of those people too. They all play a part in this food system that we've created, that our society has. And it's when we all work together that we do the best for the environment, for the animals, and for the people as well, because we need all those different lenses. So I came in and did animal science just like you. And I thought I was going to be a dog and cat veterinarian, because I didn't even really think about that cows had veterinarians. And as you know, animal science one, we talk a lot about all the different livestock species. And I got really interested in that. And then I thought, well, what other animals are there? And I started working with lots of different animals. So I worked at all the barns on campus, but then I also did some wildlife. I did some zoo. I did some sea mammal internships. And I worked with a lot of different kinds of animals before I decided that production animal medicine was really my passion. And that's what I wanted to go into. But in animal science, it's not just for pre-veterinary students at UC Davis. So they're helping people grow in a certain area that they're interested in. So you can emphasize in dairy or you can emphasize in beef. But I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian. So I kept that, like you said, that science focus. And I did an emphasis in physiology. So I even took some human physiology classes as well to help fulfill my major. But they all translated over to veterinary medicine too. So that was really interesting to me. And I kept that sciencey biology lens because that was what I was most interested in.
Yeah. And this whole discussion about looking at things differently, it almost reminds me of a Rubik's Cube. That depending on where we're standing, we're all looking at the same cube, but there's different colors on each side. And it's really about being able to get that breadth, that expanse diverse knowledge, so we can really evaluate that cube for what it is.
Yeah, and I think our food systems have become so disconnected. People talk a lot about how people don't know where their food comes from, as if that's that person's fault, but I don't think it is. But I would argue that in the same way, a lot of farmers don't know where their food goes. And then the middle people maybe don't have the excitement and passion and enthusiasm understanding their role in the food system, because there's a lot of people that help it get from the farmer to the table of the consumer. And all those people play a role. Even if you're buying direct at a farmer's market, there's still who organized the farmer's market. There's the veterinarian that played a role in it. There's the state that comes out to test those products, because in order to give them their license to sell those products. I mean, all of agriculture has a lot of steps to it. And there's a lot of people that play into that. This is something I speak about a lot too. I'm a speaker and I talk a lot about how we need to be more connected with where our food comes from. We need to be more connected with where our food goes, and we need to be more connected within the industry as well.
Yeah. And that reminds me, my freshman year, I took a class called Food Systems with Ryan Galt. I'm not sure if you ever heard of him, but one of the assignments that we had was we had to track exactly what we ate for an entire day and then try to figure out where each ingredient came from.
That's so cool.
I spent 12 hours trying to figure out where all the ingredients for my hamburger bun came from. And I turned it in. I told my TA, I'm like, I spent the entire day just on the burger bun. And she was like, actually, that's That's actually pretty good.
Yeah,
that was the whole point.
That's kind of the point, yeah.
I was on the phone with suppliers, just trying to get information about, you know, oh, where do you guys source your flour from? Where did the sesame seeds come from? And everybody just super tightened up. Like, they didn't want to tell me because I'm just a random guy on the phone. And I'm like, look, please, dear God, just give me something. This is just for a class assignment. I just don't want to fail my first one. Please just tell me something.
Well, and some of them may not have even known, too.
Exactly.
You know, the people at the companies using these ingredients don't always know where their food comes from that they're buying to create these products. And I think that's a big gap as well. It's not just about people knowing where their food comes from that they buy at the grocery store, but it's restaurants and retailers and these more packaged goods like this that we have the opportunity to strengthen those connections. And that's only going to help the farmers and the consumers.
Yeah. And I know on both the farmer and consumer side, you have your feet in both ponds for the most part, that you're a working veterinarian, you help out the producers, and you also educate the consumers. So if you would just focus on the consumers for just a moment, I mean, we just start going very shallow on just how intricate and complicated the food system is. But what would you say is your approach to educating people about those intricacies, especially as it relates to dairy?
I think we need more truth and transparency. I think that the consumer, what I've found is the headlines that you talked about are really scary, and people want what's best for the animals. What they don't know is that the farmers also want what's best for the animals. And that doesn't matter what the scale is. It doesn't matter what kind of animal they have. It doesn't matter what product they're producing or where their products go. They want what's best for the animals. And I think if we can help the consumer see that these farmers are real people and they have thought and science behind what they do, that would help immensely. I mean, the things that I show online, I get a lot of negative comments, but when I do an in-person tour on a dairy farm and show the same exact things, and people will ask, well, but why do you do it that way? Or what's the purpose of that? And then I'm able to explain it. Everyone says, oh, wow, that's amazing. Look at that technology helping the animals be better, helping the animals live better lives, helping the animals be more comfortable. Usually it's technology that people are very resistant to. And we see technology on small farms and large farms. The scale doesn't matter. I think that helping people understand what is happening on the farms and why it's happening, and then helping them see that there's real people behind that, that's the difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that, I mean, I've looked at your socials, I've looked at your website and everything. And I mean, you've expressed yourself like, hey, I'm a mom, I'm a consumer, I also am one of you. Like, I am a consumer just like everybody else. And you're also concerned about transparency, as you've mentioned, or what's happening in the food system. And I'm just curious, like, what would you say are like the major aspects of the dairy industry that people seem to be concerned about? And what would you say about those concerns?
People want their milk to be safe, as do we all. They want to know that there are not antibiotics in the milk, that the milk is not contaminated, that the milk is processed safely and cleanly. That's a big driver of conversation. And I can assure people that your milk is safe. It goes through many, many checks and balances to ensure that it is safe. People also want the cows to be well cared for, which we all do. And they see, and then I would say the third thing is they want to know that there's real people behind caring for the cows, and they don't want to feel like it's a factory or that it's industrial. So that goes with the animal welfare aspect as well, because there's a lot of things we do to improve animal well-being on the farm, but it incorporates technology. And that can sometimes be scary to people because it feels industrial. It feels like it's so much technology that it's not old McDonald with the big red barn and one cow on a pasture. And so how can that be good for the animals? Well, that's what I try to do, is explain that, because most of the technology you see on farms is put in order to help the animals feel better and live better lives. And so I try to explain that on my socials, because that's a big thing that I see. Also, the last thing I would say that I have a lot of conversations around is terminology. So the idea of a factory farm doesn't actually have a definition. And I've asked online what people are thinking when they hear the word factory farm, and everyone is thinking something different. So to some people, anything over 1,000 cows is a factory farm. To some people, anything with cows that are housed indoors is a factory farm. But what if we're having a conversation, those are our two definitions, and one of us is talking about having 1,100 cows out on pasture, and somebody else is talking about having 50 cows indoors. That there's a disconnect there, right? Now we're having a conversation about two different things. Some people think it actually comes down to animal welfare and anything where we're valuing profit over the animal's well-being is a factory farm. That's a really common definition that I get. But now look back at our 50 cows indoors or our 1,100 cows on pasture. That can be really well done, both of those systems, but they also can be done really poorly. So animal welfare is your definition, then that's going to change how you perceive this conversation. Some people, anything where the cows don't have names, are now that's a factory farm. But I've been to some places where cows have names, and they're also not getting the care that they need because maybe that person doesn't understand what they need, or they have a really small area. You know, things like that. We see some issues on every type of farm. So just having this definition in your mind doesn't necessarily tell you anything about that farm. And then we get caught in these conversations that get very angry and accusatory and judgy, but actually we're not even talking about the same thing. So I try to help people use very specific language. Do you have a, you know, when somebody says, I don't support factory farms, then I'll ask them, what do you consider a factory farm? And that's been really enlightening for a lot of people.
Yeah. And this whole conversation that we're having right now reminds me of my conversation with the last episode with Matt Stone from Dakota Growth, where he is a regenerative agriculture consultant. And he says pretty much the same thing, is there's no clear definition for a lot of the terminology that we use. And I call those terms bucket terms, because all of us carry this bucket of this word that we think it means, but not everybody can see very easily what's on the inside of this bucket. So it might look like the same thing on the outside, but once you start talking, taking those items out of the bucket, like you said, my factory farm bucket might say, you know, 1,000+ cows. Yours might say any kind of tech is used. This other person says there's no names involved. Like, once we start putting all of those items in the bucket out on the table, it sounds like only then can we have an actual discussion about what is going on in the industry.
Exactly. And I think it's important to be respectful of people's ethical decisions. If you want to buy milk from a cow that has a name, you can do that. But that doesn't mean, just because that's your choice, doesn't mean that people where these cows don't have names, that this place is bad. So I try to encourage people to have, and I work with small farms and large farms. I work with all different sizes, and I talk to people online about all the different sizes. And I think that they all have a place in this world too. I think that it's important that the consumer has a choice and they can get, because a lot of people that buy milk at a farmer's market from their neighbor, from a cow that has a name, they also order pizza at a restaurant. So, you know, agriculture is touching our lives in so many ways. And I think that just improving transparency is going to help us grow overall.
Being able to have the information to make better decisions, or at least informed decisions. Yeah. If we can't choose, or if we can't make the decision that we necessarily want to make, at least know what we're choosing to do in the meantime.
Yeah. And maybe not judge others for their choices. You know, I try to help people see that there's lots of different reasons people may make different choices. And so we should be respectful. And all the farmers are trying really hard and they have different markets, and that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. The Ted Lasso quote, be curious, not judgmental.
There you go.
I want to rewatch that show. So just to go a little bit more specific, I have heard for years and years that we don't want antibiotics in the milk and that we don't want cows treated with antibiotics. And I'm going to be a little bit honest. I don't really know what is so bad about there being antibiotics in the milk. And I feel like I've gotten to the point where I'm too afraid to ask. But now I'm going to ask while being recorded to a doctor. When I think of antibiotics, I think of, I am sick, I'm going to take something to make me feel better. Why is that like the boogeyman of milk, it feels?
That's a great question. And I love that you're asking it in this way. Antibiotics, we don't want antibiotics in our food because we don't want to be consuming low levels of antibiotics and then have that affect the effectiveness of those antibiotics in the future. There are a lot of antibiotics that we cannot use in food-producing animals at all. It's illegal because they're medically important to humans, and we don't want to risk growing resistance to those antibiotics. There's too important. Then we have antibiotics that are legal for use in food-producing animals, and all of those animals have to go through a withdrawal period before we consume products from those animals, whether that is milk or meat. They have to go through the withdrawal period, allowing the medicine to clear out of their system before we consume the products from those animals. And that's because, back to, we do not want to be consuming low levels of antibiotics. Now, there's this idea that we're just giving antibiotics willy-nilly, but that's just not true. Antibiotics have to be used for a specific purpose. They have to be prescribed by a veterinarian. Now, that's actually new. So there were some over-the-counter antibiotics up until about 8 years ago, I think, that those were not allowed to be sold over the counter. Now we have to have a prescription for any antibiotics used in food producing animals. And I think it's important to remember that these antibiotics are being used to help the animals. Just like you said, you think of antibiotics as you take it to help you feel better. Just a few days ago, I did a C-section on a cow. I did that C-section on the farm, in her home environment where she was comfortable, where I could get to her as soon as possible, and I could give her the care that she needed. But it was not a sterile environment. So I started the cow on antibiotics because that's going to help her recover from this surgery. That's just one example. There are many examples of reasons why we may choose to give an animal antibiotics. But the important thing is, it's done with guidance from a veterinarian and that the withdrawal period is required so that the antibiotics are cleared from their system before any products are used.
Gotcha. No, thank you for clarifying that. And a lot of this also reminds me about a completely different conversation, I'm sure. Pesticide use in production agriculture as well. I was a pesticide inspector for a couple years, and a lot of the terms that you're using, like you need a prescription to use it. For a lot of pesticides, you need a recommendation from a pest control advisor. Mm-hmm. Even at low levels, like bioaccumulation is what it is in pesticides, where if you ingest it over time, it's going to build up. So even at these low levels, which for me thinks, okay, well, if it's low, it doesn't really matter. But it could affect it in the long term. And there's so many things, the withdrawal period, the this, the that. It sounds like there's a lot of regulation and a lot of different stakeholders that are ensuring that those processes are met. So can you just talk for a second about who actually makes sure that cows that are treated with antibiotics meet that withdrawal period? Is it solely on the farmer, or is there other people making sure that that is followed?
Yeah, so it's the farmer and the veterinarian are working together to create the system on the farm to make sure that withdrawal periods are followed. But then the products are tested. Now, on a large farm, generally, each tanker of milk is tested for antibiotics, okay? Mm-hmm. And on a small farm, it's spot checked. So once a month, the state will come through and they will spot check that milk for antibiotics. It doesn't, they're not checked every day because they're producing smaller amounts. But on a larger farm, every single tank is tested. And if antibiotics are found, the entire tank is dumped, which is a huge cost. And then there's a full investigation into how did this happen? How can we prevent this from happening in the future? Are you a repeat offender? I mean, their license can get taken away for selling milk if they are putting out milk with antibiotics in it repeatedly. So these things are taken very seriously. The testing can be done by the co-op. The testing is always done by the state. The state also then will test some milk off the store shelves as well, spot check that as well. So there's a lot of testing and, like I said, a lot of checks and balances that go into this, ensuring that the milk is safe. Now, if a farm is organic, they are not allowed to use antibiotics in their animals, most antibiotics in their animals. So an organic farm, if that animal needs to be treated, then typically she's sold to a different farm that is not organic. So if I have an organic farm and you have a conventional farm and my cow needs antibiotics, I should still give her the antibiotics. We should not be withholding antibiotics from animals that need them. Again, because for their well-being, it's so, so important. This is an amazing thing that we have to save lives. So if my cow on my organic farm needs antibiotics, what should be done is she should receive those antibiotics and then just go to a different farm. That's a whole nother conversation. There's a lot of reasons why people choose organic over conventional, but I think it's important to understand that the safety of the product should not weigh into that decision, because organic milk does not have any antibiotics in it, and conventional milk does not have any antibiotics in it.
Yeah, I think that that's a great point of clarification as well. And I'm sure as a veterinarian that animal health and welfare are the most paramount thing.
Yeah.
And your mentality and how you approach and the lens that you look at everything through, just like it was even on the ag economic side, like I was always very much, I rejected a job offer at one point because I was like, I want to make sure that whatever we're doing here is in line with animal health and welfare.
Yeah.
And I just got weird vibes from it, but that's a whole other thing. But when it comes to really identifying animal welfare, and there's a lot of decisions that producers and those in the ag industry have to make, or practices that are maintained that seem very, I don't know, it's very easy to make a 30-second video about it and make it look terrible. I'm thinking about cow-calf separation. I'm thinking about the machinery that we use, like the almost like, what is it? The conveyor belt system where they're kind of moving the cows along. So I'm just curious, like when you're, as a veterinarian, going into these different operations, how are you deciding if they are maintaining an adequate level of animal welfare?
The biggest thing is to look at the animals. They will tell you. We can look at their hygiene. We can look at their body condition. We can look at how they walk. We can look at how they act around people. We can look at their environment. And are they laying down? Are they standing up? Are they eating? All of these things, what it comes down to at the end of the day, no matter what type of system these animals are on, small, large, organic, indoor, outdoor, pasture, dry lot, you can name them all, and purpose too. Production farm or a rescue or a backyard pet or a hobby farm, no matter where or how or what the people are doing with them, what matters is how is their life? How are they feeling? What condition are they in? Are they living a good life? Those things, that's really what matters. And the animals will tell you if they are not. Now, dairy farms go through a lot of animal welfare audits. Commercial dairy farms that are selling milk on store shelves and to major retailers, those types of things. Those commercial dairy farms, again, any size, but commercial farms are receiving sometimes 5 or 6 welfare audits a year. 99% of the milk supply is on the National Dairy Farm Program, which is Farmers Assuring Responsible Management. So most of our milk supply is covered by that program. But then there's a lot of other programs as well, where people will come through and do full evaluations of the farm and look at animal welfare on that farm. And I'm trained to do those, so I do them every time I step on the farm. One nice thing is that I am on these farms. The farms I work with are mostly large farms. And so I'm on these farms regularly, twice a month, sometimes every week. And so I get a lot of follow-up. So I know how to do these evaluations and I have all of those things in the back of my mind. And so I'm just, each time I go, I can make some recommendations. I can make some observations. I can give them some tips and tricks. I can help them if they need it. And just check in quite frequently. That's more than most small animal vets can say. Most dogs are only looked at by a veterinarian once a year and not in their home environment. So these cows are really getting a lot of evaluation by veterinarians in terms of their animal well-being. And I think that that's something, that's a message that I wish we could get out more to consumers to help them have confidence in the food that they're buying in the store.
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like you're almost doing a pre-audit audit, right? Like, it's not the official one, but it's still making sure that you're doing those spot checking, that even when the official auditor isn't there, that there are those consistent checks throughout.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll say, hey, it's time to redo your protocols, because your herd health plan, because I know that that has to be done annually per the audit. And so that has to be done annually. So I'm there. They don't wait around for an audit to come through and then have them get written up for not having good protocols. Well, I'm there frequently enough that I know when it's coming up. Okay, let's do the training. Let's make sure your protocols are up to date. And I can do that preemptively and make sure they stay on task, because I'm there so often checking in, instead of having it be a big violation and something they have to correct.
And when it comes to the issues, typically, what would you say happens when there is a violation that is found? What does that process look like?
Yeah, it depends on what they get written up for. Sometimes they are shut down. Sometimes there's kind of a three strikes you're out situation where, okay, this is a specific thing that happened and it cannot happen again. And you have to show that you've made the corrective actions to ensure it doesn't happen again. Sometimes it's something that you need to work on. We need to see improvement on this problem by the next time we come around. But all of it is working to make these farms better, and then working to shut down farms that really actually don't care. And I think that people have this idea in their heads that this idealistic vision of what life was like in the 1990s and this cute little red barn, and this is how it is. But I don't, if you've ever seen inside that red barn, do you really know how good of a quality life those animals are living? Like, just because it happened a long time ago and it feels very nostalgic doesn't necessarily mean it is better. So some of these audits and evaluations are in place to help ensure that we are doing better and better and better, because the animals, the technology and the knowledge we even have, some of it is just about knowledge. We didn't know back in the 1920s what we know now about cows and how to care for them. Nutrition, things like that have come a long way. And so the lives of the cows now, I think, are hugely better than the lives of the cows 100 years ago. We have come a long way in animal health and animal welfare, improving the lives of these animals. And that's something I'm really proud of. While people want this idealistic vision and they may look to fulfill that, I want them to really think critically and make the informed choices about what's important to them. These checks and balances that I'm talking about and the evaluations, those are for people that are producing products from the milk from their cows with a license and that are selling their milk commercially. Just because your neighbor has a cow doesn't necessarily mean that that cow's milk is better than the grocery store milk. And in fact, it's a big question mark, because they don't have those checks and balances and they haven't been evaluated. I don't ever want to shame anyone or tell people what to buy, but I do think it's important that you really ask yourself what's important to me and make sure your choices in the store are matching that.
A quote that I heard that really sums that up very well, I think, is Dave Ramsey, the financial coach man. Yeah, the man, the myth, the legend. Somebody asked him about the multi-level marketing or like how those different organizations work. And he said, hey man, look, I'm an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. Whatever you think is best for you and your family and whatever you want to focus on, that's great by me. Just really evaluate every opportunity that comes along.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing that I wanted to kind of talk about next was, in farming and agriculture, like you mentioned, there's just an insane amount of information and knowledge that we've gained over the last 100, 50, 20, 10, even probably a few years, as our tools and our methodologies have evolved. In ag, we also kind of face this challenge of high turnover, where we have employees for a little bit, they leave. It is kind of difficult to get everybody up to speed on all the latest regulations, techniques, etc. And I know that on the consumer side, you really focus on educating what goes on inside of that barn. But what about the education of the side of people that are actually in the barn doing that day-to-day work? How do you help out with that?
My partners and I started Dairykind, which is an animal well-being company. It's an education company for workers on farms and for farmers themselves to help them understand the best practices and help them do the best job that they can do to care for those animals. Turnover is high in dairy, as well as many other sectors of ag, and it is a big challenge, like you said. So one way that we can help is by better educating our people from day one. And that reduces risk, but it also empowers the people to do a better job and to have pride in what they're doing. This is a really important job, not just for the animals themselves or for the farm, but for the milk that leaves that farm and becomes 1,000 other products throughout our world, really. And I want all of the employees to be proud of what they're doing. This is a very important job, and we want them to do it well and feel empowered to do a good job and make a difference in this world, from everything from the cow to the kids that are drinking this milk. So we have an online platform that provides educational training courses to farmers and farm employees. I, as a veterinarian, do a lot of training on the farms that I go to, and I think that that's still very important. But I'm not there every day. So to allow them to have a video-based course that's on demand that they can pull up at any time in their native language has made a big difference in the farms that I go to and in the farms that are using this, because now they have something that they can utilize that also then helps keep track of the training and remind them, hey, you're due for a training. Most of the animal welfare audits require annual training. So this system also helps track and document that training and then reminds them so you don't forget, because we all get busy. And then I come in, or the veterinarian on that farm can come in and do further follow-up training and more specific training for that specific farm. But it gives the employees the foundation and the understanding to understand why they're doing what they're doing and why it's important that they do a good job.
Yeah. And I was looking at the Dairykind website, and I think that that aspect of having the training, so it says here training in English and Spanish, which is important because a lot of folks in the ag industry do speak Spanish. That is a big challenge that I have as a pesticide instructor, is I don't speak Spanish fluently, so I have to find other ways to get that information out. But it says here with the ability to customize in other languages as well. For my own curiosity, how does that customization work?
Yeah, we have some farms, and there are little pockets throughout the United States where they have people that are speaking other languages. Sometimes it is other countries from Latin America, but sometimes it's people from wholly different parts of the world, which is really interesting. But the important thing is that they're receiving this education in their native language so that they fully understand it. We're not just nodding and smiling and checking a box. We're really getting the message, and we're really understanding what you are trying to learn so that you can utilize that in your daily job. So the trainings are video-based, and then they have an audio voiceover. So we can voice over in other languages as well, if that is needed.
That's awesome. Yeah. And once I started getting into the pesticide training, the thing that our instructor, the train-the-trainer program, warned us about was the smile and nod. Yeah. It's like, when they're doing this, you made a mistake. You need to go back and you need to make sure that you've actually explained things properly. Because, you know, as with pesticides, as with dairy, if you're making mistakes, there are actual repercussions for health, lives, and just the industry overall. So,
yeah,
very important. But just to kind of round out our conversation, one of the biggest things that I like to ask people about is kind of a callback to something that I did in college. I was in the Alpha Gamma Rho fraternity. I was the philanthropy chair, and I did something called the WID conference, W-I-D, which stood for the what I saw as the three biggest issues in the food system at the time: food waste, food insecurity, and food distribution. If I could go back in time, I would add an E at the end for education. Maybe every time I tell the story, it just gets me one step closer to actually doing a conference. However, food waste, insecurity, distribution, and education. I saw that those were the biggest issues in our food system. And I'm curious, in the line of work that you do, what would you say is the biggest issue within that realm of those four categories for dairy specifically?
Well, I think you can guess that I'm very passionate about education. So I don't know if this is a very fair question because I am pretty biased, but I think that education is so important on all fronts. It is important for the consumer. It is important for the farmers. It is important for the people in between. It is important for the people actually caring for the animals. Education is also going to just amplify those other three things that you talked about, which I could talk a lot about food waste and food insecurity and food distribution, because I do think those are hugely important topics, but none of them affects the other ones as much as I think education does. I think education is the stool that the other three stand on, and that's why I think it's the most important. But all of those are very, very important. And dairy, interestingly, is doing a lot to combat all three of those. And it's very cool, some of the things that the industry is doing. So that's probably a whole nother conversation for another time. But the industry, which when I say the industry, that's another kind of bucket term, like you say, it is very scary to people to think about big industry, big milk, or whatever they want to call it. But really, the industry is just a bunch of people that care about this thing. Like, there's a farmers market industry. There's a pet care industry, right? There's an industry for anything. It's just a bunch of people that all have some stakeholder in this. So the dairy industry is a bunch of farmers and retailers and suppliers and people that have come together to say, hey, let's make change at a bigger level, at a higher level. There's, for example, there's a net zero initiative where they're looking at reducing carbon emissions from dairy farms across the United States and to make those emissions net zero by the year 2050. That's pretty incredible. And they're making huge strides towards that. California is doing some really awesome things in that sector as well. That's just one example, but none of those three things can do as much without education.
I also am pretty biased towards education, especially. And I think that's almost what every single guest so far has said, is education really is the biggest piece, whether you're educating the growers or the producers, their employees, the consumers. The more information that we know, the more transparent we are, the better that we're going to get as a society, as an industry, to use the bucket term again. It does really stand to that. And that's something that I do encourage everybody at every level, is to be curious, be present. If you feel as though you're filling in gaps of knowledge with just things that you've made up or seen on the internet, it might be time to have a conversation. And Michelle, if people want to hear more about you or get you to speak at one of their events, what would be the best way for them to get in contact with you?
They can follow me on social media at Dairy Doc on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and now YouTube. I just started a YouTube, so check me out there. And then they're welcome to reach out through those platforms. I also have a website, michelleshack.com, and you can check us out at dairykind.com as well.
Wonderful. And all of your contact will be down in the show notes. But Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like I just want to go on a huge deep dive of everything dairy right now. My friends call me the milkman because I drink so much, and yes, I was so excited for this. Thank you for your time and for sharing a little bit of magic with the listeners today.
Thank you so much.
That was such a fantastic episode. Huge thank you to Dr. Michelle Schack for your time and attention today and really just sharing your magic with the listeners. I'd say that my biggest takeaway is really just the importance of clarifying what people mean when they say certain words. We really hit on the whole premise and idea of these bucket terms, where we are carrying around our own definitions of these words, terms, and phrases, and really just make sure that we're on the same page as we're talking about the problems in our food system, because only then can we come up with an actual comprehensive and holistic solution. If we're not talking about the same thing, how are we going to come up with a solution? So thank you for your time and attention, Michelle. And for the listener, thank you so much for being curious and present with us today.
I'm sure that there's a million different things that you could be doing right now, and you took the time to really listen and learn about our dairy industry and what that really looks like. And I hope the next time that you're in the dairy section and you reach for the next jug, that you really think about the cows and people that make it possible. If you could just please take one moment to share this podcast with a friend, somebody else that drinks milk, somebody else that is curious or may have heard these different problems or potential solutions about the industry, if you could just share it with them so that they can then learn as well. The more people we have in this community, the more we're able to make a broader and better food system. Thank you so much for listening. Till next time, remember to keep it fresh, keep it local, keep it foggy. I'll see you guys in the next episode.